All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we're taking a deep dive into something pretty amazing.
Oh, I know, right? I love this topic.
Yeah, it's the connection between sleep and this rare neurological disorder called alternating hemiplegia of childhood, or AHC for short.
I mean, AHC is fascinating on its own, but when you throw sleep into the mix,
It gets really interesting, right?
totally.
So, just to give everyone a quick overview, AHC affects something like 1 in 1 million children.
Super rare.
Yeah, super rare. And it's characterized by these episodes of temporary paralysis, sometimes on one side of the body, sometimes both.
And it can be so scary for the families, because it comes with all these other neurological symptoms
Oh,
too.
absolutely.
Like, it's not just paralysis. We're talking about developmental delays, seizures, difficulty with speech and movement.
It's a lot. And what's crazy is that all of these symptoms, poof, they vanish during sleep.
It's like the brain just hits the reset button when they fall asleep.
It really does make you wonder what's happening in the brain during sleep that's giving these kids a break from all of those symptoms.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Well, for this deep dive, we're going to be focusing on a 2019 study from Duke University by Kansandra and Makati.
Ah, yes, that one.
Yeah, they did something really interesting. They took a close look at the sleep studies and clinical evaluations of 22 children with AHC.
And that study, I think it was really a game changer in how we think about sleep in AHC.
Absolutely. So let's jump right in. What did they find?
Well, the most striking finding, I think, was that the vast majority of these kids, like 20 out of the 22, had at least one sleep-related issue.
Wow. So it's not just like a few kids here and there having trouble sleeping. We're talking about almost everyone in the study.
Right, and these weren't just, little things either. These were some pretty serious diagnosable sleep disorders.
Okay, so what kind of sleep disorders were they seeing?
Well, all sorts, actually.
Give us some examples.
Well, they found kids with obstructive sleep apnea, which means they're actually stopping breathing for short periods during sleep. It can be, yeah. Then there was behavioral insomnia, where kids have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep.
Oh, I can relate to that one.
Right. And even some cases of delayed sleep-wake phase syndrome.
Okay, and remind me, what is that one again?
Basically, their internal body clock is misaligned with the typical day-night cycle. So they might be staying up really late and having trouble waking up in the morning.
Ah, so like the teenage sleep pattern, but more extreme.
Yeah, you could say that.
So a whole mix of sleep problems, but all showing up in this specific group of kids with AHC. That's a pretty big red flag, isn't it?
Absolutely. It screams that there's got to be a connection between AHC and sleep disorders. It's not just a coincidence.
Right. Like statistically, that's way too high to just be random chance.
Exactly. And the authors of the study, they even pointed out that children with AHC are at a way higher risk of sleep-disordered breathing than kids in the general population.
Oh, I remember that from the study. They gave some numbers to back that up too, right?
Oh, yeah. They talked about the apnea-hypopnea index, which is basically a measure of how many times someone stops breathing or has shallow breathing during sleep.
And what was the average for the kids with AHC?
It was 5.8 events per hour.
That's high.
Yeah, anything over 5 is generally considered abnormal.
Wow, so we're talking about a significant difference compared to kids without AHC.
Oh, yeah, big time. For kids without AHC, the average is more like 0.2 events per hour, so night and day.
And it's not just the breathing problems, right? You mentioned other issues too.
Yes. They were also waking up way more often throughout the night, like way more.
And that's measured by the arousal index, if I'm remembering correctly.
You got it. And their average arousal index was like 15 events per hour.
So they're not only not getting enough sleep, but the sleep they are getting is all broken up and fragmented.
Exactly. And that can have such a huge impact on their daily lives. Think about it. If you were constantly waking up throughout the night, how would you function the next day?
Ah, oh, I'd be a mess.
Right. You'd be exhausted, irritable. Probably couldn't focus on anything.
And for a child who's still developing and already dealing with all the challenges of AHC, I can only imagine how much harder that makes everything.
Oh, absolutely. It can affect their mood, their behavior, their learning, their ability to just cope with everything.
Makes those findings about sleep disorders and AHC all the more concerning, that's for sure.
For sure. So now the question is, why? Why are these sleep problems so common in children with AHC?
Yeah, that's the big mystery, isn't it? We've established that there's a link, but we still don't really know why.
Right, and that's where things get really interesting.
Ooh, I like where this is going.
Remember we talked about that other paper by Ding, the one that looked at cerebrospinal fluid?
Yes. The fluid that surrounds your brain and spinal cord. I remember thinking, what does that have to do with sleep or AHC?
It seemed random, but it's actually a pretty important piece of the puzzle.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So this research found that the concentration of certain ions in cerebrospinal fluid, it actually changes during the sleep-wake cycle.
Okay, but help me out here. Why are ions in cerebrospinal fluid important? What do they actually do?
Well, these ions, they're like tiny little messengers that help our brain cells talk to each other. They're essential for communication between neurons.
Oh, okay. So if the balance of these ions gets messed up, it can cause problems with how the brain functions.
Exactly.
So is the thinking that maybe these changes in ion concentrations during sleep, could they somehow be connected to why AHC symptoms disappear? Like maybe sleep allows the brain to rebalance those ions, and that's why the paralysis and other symptoms go away?
You're on the right track. That's one of the main theories.
Wow, that's fascinating. So
Wow.
sleep is not just about resting, it's also about the brain doing all this intricate chemical fine-tuning behind the scenes.
Exactly.
This is making me think. If scientists could figure out how to manipulate these ion channels or the composition of cerebrospinal fluid, could that lead to new treatments for AHC?
It's an exciting possibility, right? I mean, imagine if we could develop therapies that mimic what the brain is doing naturally during sleep.
Yeah, like giving the brain a boost to help it rebalance those ions and maybe even prevent those AHC episodes from happening in the first place.
It's definitely an area that needs more research, but the potential is huge.
It really is. But for now, it seems like the most important takeaway from that Duke study is that all children diagnosed with AHC should be getting regular sleep evaluations.
Absolutely. Even if parents haven't noticed any obvious sleep problems, it's crucial to get a professional assessment.
Right, because those sleep disorders can be tricky to spot, especially in kids who might not be able to communicate what they're experiencing.
Exactly. And early detection and treatment could make a world of difference.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about AHC and sleep disorders, but there's another piece to this puzzle that we need to explore, and it's something that almost seems like the opposite of AHC.
Ah, yes, you're talking about benign familial nocturnal alternating hemiplegia of childhood, or BNAHC for short.
Try saying that 5 times fast.
Haha, I know, right?
But seriously, what is BNAHC and how does it relate to everything we've been talking about?
Well, get this, with BNAHC, the episodes of paralysis actually happen during sleep. It's the complete flip side of AHC.
Mind blown. So stay tuned, folks, because in part two, we're going to dive into the world of BNAHC and try to unravel this mind-boggling connection between sleep and paralysis.
It's going to be a wild ride, so buckle up. Welcome back, Deep Divers. Ready for more?
Oh, you know I am. That cliffhanger at the end of part one, you can't just leave us hanging like that.
All right. Let's get right back into it. So, where were we? Ah, yes. Alternating hemiplegia of childhood or AHC and the sleep disorders.
Yeah, it's crazy how many kids with AHC are also dealing with some kind of sleep problem.
I know, right? The numbers from that Duke study were really eye-opening.
It really makes you think how many kids out there are going undiagnosed.
Oh, absolutely. And suffering unnecessarily because a lot of these sleep disorders are very treatable.
Right, which is why routine sleep evaluations for these kids are so important, even if they don't seem to be having sleep issues.
Exactly. It's better to be safe than sorry. And speaking of mysteries, remember that other condition we talked about? The one where the paralysis happens during sleep?
Oh, yeah. Benign familial nocturnal alternating hemiplegia of childhood.
Yeah.
I still can't say that without stumbling over my words.
Me neither. Ha ha. BNAHC. We'll just call it that for short.
Works for me.
Yeah.
So BNAHC, it's like the bizarro world version of AHC, right?
In a way, yeah. With AHC, the symptoms disappear during sleep, but with BNAHC, they actually start up.
It's wild. Like, how does the brain even do that?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And honestly, we don't have all the answers yet, but what we do know is that sleep is far more active than we used to think.
Okay, elaborate on that for me. What do you mean?
Well, for a long time, scientists thought of sleep as this passive state, like the brain was just powering down for the night.
Yeah, like a computer going to sleep mode.
Right. But it turns out the brain is doing all sorts of things during sleep, consolidating memories, clearing out waste products, fine-tuning neural connections.
So it's not just resting, it's like actively working on a bunch of essential tasks.
Exactly. It's like a nightly maintenance crew coming in and making sure everything is running smoothly for the next day.
And in the case of AHC and BNAHC, it seems like sleep is also playing a crucial role in either suppressing or triggering these episodes of paralysis.
Right. It's almost like sleep is this powerful modulator of neurological activity. And for people with these conditions, that modulation is going a bit haywire.
Fascinating stuff. Okay, so let's talk specifics about AAHC. How common is this condition?
Well, thankfully, it's much rarer than AHC. We're talking super, super rare.
So not something most people need to worry about.
Right. And unlike AHC, which usually shows up in early childhood, BNAHC can sometimes go unnoticed for years.
Wait, really? So people could be having these episodes of paralysis during sleep and not even know it.
It's possible, yeah. The episodes are often pretty short-lived, like a few minutes to an hour, and they tend to happen during lighter stages of sleep.
So they might not fully wake up during the episode.
Exactly. And even if they do partially wake up, they might not remember it afterwards.
Okay, but how would it go unnoticed for years? Wouldn't a sleep partner see something?
Well, sometimes the paralysis is really subtle, like only affecting one limb.
So it might not be super obvious.
Right, and it's happening during sleep, so it's not like they're suddenly collapsing or anything.
Sneaky little condition, this BNAHC.
It is. So how do doctors diagnose it, you ask?
Well, yeah. If it's so hard to detect, how do they know what they're dealing with?
It's often a process of elimination. They'll rule out other more common things first, like sleep paralysis, narcolepsy, even seizures.
So like detective work, ruling out all the suspects until they find the culprit.
Exactly. They'll look at the person's medical history, do a physical exam, and often recommend a sleep study.
Ah, the trusty sleep study. So they can actually see these paralysis episodes happening on the monitors.
Yep, they'll see a sudden drop in muscle activity, even though the person is still asleep.
That's pretty cool, actually. Seeing the brain in action, or in this case, inaction.
It is. Okay, so we've talked about how rare BNAHC is, how it's diagnosed, but what about the cause? What's going on in the brain to make this happen?
Yeah, spill the tea.
Well, unlike AHC, where we have some clues about genes and brain chemistry, the cause of BNAHC is still pretty mysterious.
Bummer.
I know, right? But there's growing evidence that BNAHC might be related to, wait for it, migraine.
Migraine. Like the headaches. What do headaches have to do with paralysis during sleep?
It seems strange, I know, but bear with me. Migraines are thought to be caused by these waves of abnormal electrical activity in the brain.
Okay, so how does that connect to BNAHC?
Well, those abnormal brain waves, they can disrupt all sorts of brain functions, including motor control.
Ah, so in BNHC, those disruptive brain waves are happening during sleep, and that's what's causing the paralysis.
Bingo. It's like a migraine attack that specifically targets the motor pathways.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So even though AHC and BNHC have these opposite symptoms, they might actually share a common underlying mechanism, messed up electrical activity in the brain.
You got it. It's like two sides of the same neurological coin.
Okay, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
So we've got AHC, where sleep calms the brain down and relieves paralysis. And then we've got BNAHC, where sleep seems to trigger those abnormal brain waves and cause paralysis.
Right. It really makes you appreciate just how complex and interconnected everything in the brain is.
And how much we still don't know about sleep and its role in all of this.
Exactly. There's so much more research to be done, but
Yeah.
what we've learned so far is already pretty incredible.
It is. Okay, so where do we go from here? I'm ready for more mind-blowing revelations. Okay, deep divers, we are back for the final part of our sleep and neurological conditions deep dive.
Oh, I'm so glad we're doing a part three. I feel like we've only just scratched the surface of this topic.
I know. There's just so much to unpack.
Absolutely. And I feel like what we've talked about so far with alternating hemiplegia of childhood and benign familial nocturnal alternating hemiplegia of childhood.
BNAHC.
Yeah, BNAHC. It just highlights how important sleep is for our brains, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And how little we still understand about it.
Right. Like, it's not just about getting enough sleep or feeling rested. It's about all these intricate processes happening in the brain while we sleep.
Yeah, like resetting those ion concentrations in the cerebrospinal fluid.
Oh, yeah. Like, how cool is that? These little ions floating around, and they're playing such a crucial role in how our brain cells communicate.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder what else is going on in there that we haven't even discovered yet.
Right. Sleep is like this whole other universe of brain activity that we're just starting to explore.
Well, and I think one of the biggest takeaways for me from this deep dive so far has been that study we talked about in part one, you know, the one from Duke, about sleep disorders in kids with AHC.
Oh, yeah, the Kanzanger and Makati study.
Yeah, that one, it just really drove home the point that sleep evaluations are so important for these kids.
Absolutely. Even if parents haven't noticed any obvious sleep problems, it's worth getting a professional assessment.
Because those sleep disorders, they can be sneaky little things.
They really can. And, you know, they might not be causing any super obvious symptoms, but they could be quietly affecting those kids' overall health and well-being.
Right. Like imagine you're already dealing with all the challenges of AHC, and then on top of that, you're not getting the restorative sleep you need.
Oh, that just makes everything so much harder. It's like trying to run a marathon with a backpack full of rocks.
Totally. Okay, so we talked a lot about AHC, those sleep disorders. Then we went on this whole tangent about BNAHC, which was fascinating, by the way.
Oh, BNAHC is mind-blowing, isn't it? Paralysis during sleep. It's like the brain decided to play a prank on you.
I know, it really is the opposite of what we see with AHC.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it seems like both conditions could be related to those same underlying brain mechanisms.
Right, like it all comes back to that disrupted electrical activity in the brain.
Yeah, whether those signals are getting amplified during sleep in BNHC or calmed down during sleep in AHC, it's still all about those electrical impulses.
And the fact that sleep can have such a profound impact on these conditions, it just opens up so many
And I
questions.
know, like, this has got me thinking. If we could somehow manipulate sleep patterns or brain activity during sleep, could we actually develop new treatments for these conditions?
That's a great question. It's definitely an area that's ripe for research.
Right. Like, imagine if we could use targeted sleep therapies to not just manage symptoms, but actually modify the course of these neurological conditions.
It's like harnessing the power of sleep to rewire the brain almost.
It's a pretty amazing thought, right?
Totally. And it really speaks to the fact that sleep is not just something we do to feel rested. It's this fundamental biological process that plays a critical role in our physical and mental health.
Well said. Okay, deep divers. I think it's time to wrap things up for today.
Oh, already. Time flies when you're talking about sleep.
I know, right? But don't worry, this is just the beginning of the conversation.
There's so much more to learn about sleep and its role in these neurological conditions and countless others.
Absolutely. So keep those curious minds engaged and stay tuned for more deep dives in the future.
And don't forget to check out the show notes for links to all those studies we discussed.
Yes. Go read the research, do some exploring of your own, and who knows, maybe you'll be the one to make the next groundbreaking discovery.
Until next time, deep divers.
Sleep well.